Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of the House Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee to order. I believe we have a quorum quickly. Looks like it. A quorum has been established. We have five bills on the agenda today, members, and I will be mixing up the order just a little bit because some of our colleagues from other committees need to get back to their committees, so we're going to just be a little bit flexible about the order. But first, I'd like to entertain a motion to approve the minutes from March 27th. Vice Chair Schwartz, would you approve the minutes?
I move the minutes.
Right, seeing none, those in favor of approving the minutes, say aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes. Those in favor of approving the minutes from March 27th, please say aye.
Aye.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see that.
Madam Chair, I'm not finding minutes in my packet.
Same with me, Madam Chair.
Oh, thank you. We'll get right on that. Thank you. We will have them passed out right away, and then we will reapprove the minutes. Meanwhile, while you're reviewing the minutes, I'd like to invite Representative Bakeberg to the testifier table because he has to get on to another committee. So Representative Bakeberg, his bill is HF 2634. The chair moves HF 2634 be before the committee with the intention to lay the bill over for possible inclusion. I'd like to recognize Representative Bakeberg to present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Robbins, Co-Chair Wolgamott, members. House File 2634 proposes modifications to the North Star Promise eligibility requirements to focus on students pursuing programs of study in industries and occupations that the Office of Higher Ed and the Office of Employment and Economic Development, or DEED, determines to be high demand fields in Minnesota. The bill specifically states that the Office of Higher Ed will determine the top 20 in demand industries and occupations based on employment data from DEED. In order to continue to meet the industry needs, the Office of Higher Ed will also be required to review data at least once every 3 years. This strategic investment is needed to address the workforce shortages in high demand areas such as healthcare, professional services, manufacturing. This bill takes a targeted approach to workforce development by aligning the investment of the North Star Promise to jobs that are in the actual workforce needs. It supports students that are pursuing careers so that when they graduate, they'll be able to find a job. It provides a pipeline of talent for businesses, and it requires the department to review its processes to ensure that alignment is happening between higher ed and the workforce needs. Simply put, House File 2634 ensures that the North Star Scholarship serves students, employers, and taxpayers by directing the resources to fields where graduates are most likely to find employment while also serving their communities. So, Madam Chair, I believe we have some testifiers, so I'd move that we move to public comment.
Thank you, Representative Bakeberg. Our first testifier is on Zoom. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony. Can you hear us, Brad? You might be on mute. Can you try again? Representative Bakeberg, do you have any other testifiers in addition to this person?
Yep.
Okay, so why don't we bring your next testifier on, and then meanwhile, if everyone can work with our... Oh, he popped up. Hello, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
You all hear me?
Yes, now we can. Please proceed.
I can't hear you. So, good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the House Education Committee. My name is Brad Gruhat, president of the Marshall Area Chamber of Commerce, which represents over 640 members that include small and large businesses, as well as our educational systems and our nonprofit organizations. I am here today to speak on two bills that go to modify the North Star Promise, House File 2441 and House File 2634. Being in Marshall, which is an hour from Brookings and an hour and a half from Sioux Falls and Watertown, we face workforce challenges all across the board, no matter what kind of industry it is. A big part of that is the Build Dakota program that started in 2014 and was funded by the state of South Dakota and Denny Sandford to the tune of $50 million. Build Dakota funds four tech schools, and two of them are bordering Minnesota, Southeast Tech in Sioux Falls and Lake Area and Watertown. The other two schools are in Mitchell, which isn't far from Minnesota, and the others in Rapid City. Because of this program, we are losing talent to South Dakota, which has been detrimental not only to our workforce in Southwest Minnesota, but also to our technical colleges in Southwest Minnesota, including Minnesota West Technical College campuses and Bridgewater College campuses. The Build Dakota program has helped boost tech school enrollment in South Dakota to an overall headcount of 7,407 in the fall of 2024, up 7.1% from the previous year. Data from the State Board of Technical Education shows that 87% of students who graduated in 2022 were working in South Dakota or continuing their education 6 months after graduation. This not only includes students from South Dakota, but also Minnesota. In 2014, 298 scholarships were given out. In 2024, 533 were given out. Over that 10-year time frame, 3,353 scholarships have been awarded to the tune of $43.4 million. 89% of those students are attached to an industry partner by graduation. These kind of stats are making it hard for our businesses in the southwest part of the state. In summary, we respectfully ask that the modifications are made to the North Star Promise to tie these qualified students in Minnesota to help fill these workforce gaps and to combat the Build Dakota program in South Dakota. Mrs. Chair and members of the House Education Committee, thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, I believe it's Christy Ransom. Is she available?
I am. Would you like me to, I want to testify on both bills, but would you like me to testify separately or kind of note them together?
I think you can testify to both if you would like. And sure. Please start by saying your name for the record. Thank you.
Sure, of course. Chair and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Christy Ransom. I am the president and CEO of the Winona Area Chamber of Commerce. I'm here to support House File 2634 and 2241 more specifically, which would help ensure Minnesota's investment in students align not only with high demand and most pressing workforce needs in our state, but also to tie them to residency and workforce in our state. I'm going to start with 2634. As businesses and community leaders, we hear the same message really every day. Employers are ready to hire, but they can't find the talent. In Winona alone, according to Deed, we have 499 open jobs today. Across the state, the demand spans industries from healthcare to advanced manufacturing to skilled trades, and those all exist right here in our area. House File 2634 takes an important step by tying North Star Promise eligibility to programs that prepare students for careers in high demand industries and occupations. This ensures state dollars are not just helping students access education, but they're helping Minnesota strategically grow the workforce we need. By basing the criteria on Deed's top 20 projected growth areas, this bill creates a data-driven, adaptable framework that will evolve with the labor market. It recognizes that workforce development isn't just about access for students, but it's about outcomes. This targeted approach also complements efforts like our Minnesota State College Southeast College Opportunity Program that happens in Winona, where private businesses are already funding tuition for local students in exchange for building a local talent pipeline. It's a public-private model that works, and House File 2634 brings the same intentionality to the state level. To continue on regarding House File 2241, this really does help communities like ours that are border cities. It retains the talent we've already invested in. Minnesota's workforce shortages are real. We all know that. As I stated earlier, we have 499 open jobs here. I did some research regarding the North Star Promise program. At nearly 530 students at Winona State University and Minnesota State College Southeast are receiving support through the North Star Promise program. And I should state that 25% of the students at Winona State University come from Wisconsin alone, and 31% of Wisconsin students attend MSCS. So those are automatically disqualified students for receiving aid. Those students, those 530 students, are students who could fill jobs tomorrow if we give them a reason why. 530 students and 499 open jobs. The math is, it works. This is what we at the Chamber call low-hanging fruit, a direct, immediate opportunity to strengthen our workforce using talent that's already here. It's critical that we not only help students access education, but also align those investments with workforce outcomes. Other states, as Brad Gruhat said, are doing this well. South Dakota's Build Dakota Scholarship Program, for example, ties aid to employment within the state. If the requirement isn't met, the scholarship converts to a loan. It's a smart approach, and Minnesota should consider something similar. This isn't about limiting opportunity to students. It's about ensuring our state sees a return on its investment, and our communities see the talent they need to grow and thrive. As a Chamber of Commerce, we do our part every single day to attract and retain talent in Winona, but the bill represents a powerful tool to support local effort. So let's not miss this chance to keep these future nurses, educators, engineers, and business leaders right here in Minnesota. Thank you so much for your time and your leadership on this important issue.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Lauren Schotthurst. And after that will be Mike Dean. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lauren Schotthorst, and I am testifying today on behalf of the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, a statewide business organization representing more than 6,300 businesses and over 500,000 employees across the state, and the Minnesota Chamber Federation, a collection of over 60 local chambers of commerce. The Chamber leads the business community to advance responsible public policy that creates jobs, enables commerce, and grows the economy when looking at key factors of GDP and job growth, a strong workforce, and smart public investment. Building and retaining a skilled workforce that is responsive to the evolving needs of the economy is a 2025 priority for the Minnesota Chamber Federation, and I'm pleased you've heard from some of our local chamber partners today. With that in mind, we appreciate the opportunity to support House File 2241 and 2634. Out of consideration for time limits, my remarks will touch on both bills, and my full testimony has been submitted for your review. Employers in every community and in every industry report that finding, hiring, and training workers remains a barrier to growth. As such, Minnesota needs to rethink how public and private sector systems and stakeholders work together to respond to the evolving skills, training, and workforce needs across our state's economy. This is why we support adding in-state residency and employment requirements and focusing state aid on programs in high-demand industries and occupations when looking at projected employment growth or highest number of job openings in the state. State funding, like the North Star Promise, can be foundational in helping students access necessary training beyond high school. But equally as important is ensuring that recipients of state aid are getting meaningful employment opportunities and staying to be a part of the Minnesota workforce post-graduation, so taxpayers and the state also receive a direct return on this investment. The education and workforce development system as a whole must closely track and adapt to changes in the labor market, and a more nimble system should have the ability to provide pathways of areas in greatest demand and promote the development of core skills and competencies to succeed in Minnesota. In so much as the committee considers these types of state investments to be driving state workforce development efforts, policymakers should consider incorporating an industry in demand element as well as a work in Minnesota requirement to combat our demographic, employment, migration, and state budget trends. Because House File 2634 and 2241 would achieve these goals, the Chamber Federation urges your support. Minnesota's economic future requires a strategic focus on the workforce from business leaders and policymakers. The Chamber Federation is looking forward to working with members of this committee to retain a strong quality of life by focusing on solutions to grow our economy this session. Thank you for the opportunity to share this perspective with the committee.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Mike Dean. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Robbins, Chair Wolgamott, and members of the committee. My name is Mike Dean. I'm the Executive Director of North Star Prosperity. We're an organization that's committed to expanding opportunities for every Minnesotan to achieve economic freedom and build a meaningful future. I'm here today to express my deep concern about the proposed changes to the North Star Promise Scholarship. These changes will not help Minnesota address its workforce shortages. In fact, it will do the exact opposite. This bill actually already exists. It's called the Minnesota Workforce Scholarship. We've had this program for roughly 6 years, and we haven't seen huge increases in enrollment like we have with the North Star Promise program. I think it's important to note the North Star Promise program has driven huge enrollment in our community colleges, our state universities, and the University of Minnesota. And my question is why? That's because messaging matters. Research shows that free college messaging is just as important as the grant itself in getting students to enroll. Students, especially those from low-income backgrounds and communities of color, face significant barriers to understanding college costs and financial aid. Simply saying tuition is free isn't enough. We need to have clear, consistent, simple messaging, and the North Star Promise delivers on that promise. You've heard some of the testifiers talk about the South Dakota Build Scholarship Program. It's cited as sort of this model for this legislation that you're before you today. But the fact is that that program has only served a fraction of the students that participated in the North Star Promise Program who's already helped. In fact, four times more students have accessed the North Star Promise Program in its first year, whereas with the Build Dakota, it's over its entire 10-year history. So unlike the Build Dakota, North Star Promise is designed to reach a broader range of students and address Minnesota's workforce scale at needs, while Build Dakota is designed to recruit out-of-state students to move to South Dakota. And that's not what Minnesota's goal is with the North Star Promise program. Residency requirements make sense when you're trying to recruit out-of-state students, but it doesn't make sense when you're trying to keep your own in your local communities like we're doing with the North Star Promise program. As we mentioned in our letter to you, New York State has actually experimented with this very idea, and the requirements that they've created were overly complicated, the program, and it really reduced the overall effectiveness of it. The reality is that workforce shortages exist because we do not have enough people graduating. The North Star Promise has reversed decades-long trend of declining enrollment in its first year alone, and we need to expand that, not restrict it. Other statewide promise programs invest in outreach, guidance, and support to help students not only enroll but also graduate. And Minnesota should follow suit by increasing those outreach efforts through direct mail, text messaging, and social media to encourage students to make sure that they're eligible. That's the best way to really help make sure we're achieving those workforce shortages. Also, the state of Tennessee has expanded mentorship and student support services through the Tennessee Promise, and over 5,000 volunteer mentors help students complete their degrees. We think that is a much more worthwhile place to invest resources and time and effort. The proposed amendments add unnecessary complexity to the program that already is working, and the state does not impose residency requirements on the state grant program or its workforce scholarship, or even tuition. Minnesota State doesn't charge out-of-state tuition. So we literally having South Dakota residents come to Minnesota State institutions and have subsidized tuition, and there's no residency requirements on them at all. Adding this red tape to the North Star Promise will only discourage students from participating in the Promise programs that have, and we've learned what works over the last decade with Promise programs. So if we're serious about solving Minnesota's workforce shortage, we must focus on what works. And unfortunately, I believe that the Minnesota House is heading in the wrong direction with both this amendment and the House budget targets for higher education. Those budget targets will force cuts to the state grant program, cost tuition increases, and I urge you to not balance the budget on the backs of students. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Jessica Sander? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jessica Rose Sander, and I'm a freshman history major at the University of Minnesota. I'm the youngest of nine children raised in White Bear Lake in a house full of noise, love, and sacrifice. I'm the first person in my family to go to college, an expectation that was communicated to me early in my life when I demonstrated academic potential. My mom was especially steadfast in her belief that I should pursue a higher education. For her, it was a non-negotiable. My mom was diagnosed with cancer when I was six. My dad worked hard to support us, but one income had to stretch far, especially with mounting medical bills. my parents did their best to protect me from financial stress until I started applying to college. As I reviewed tuition costs, each one more daunting than the last, I felt my dream slipping away. Then one day, my dad handed me a mailer about the North Star Promise. I think you'd qualify. We applied, I got it, and it was as if a weight was lifted off of my shoulders. I could go to college. I could pursue my passion. I could fulfill my mom's dream for me. The North Star Promise isn't about picking the right major or the perfect school. It's about giving low-income students a shot at higher education without the crushing weight of debt dictating our future. HF 2634 threatens that. It narrows our choices and forces students into specific high-demand fields without giving them the guidance or flexibility we need to make informed decisions. We're not just numbers in a workforce education. We are students, dreamers, and future leaders. This program was created to make college more affordable, not to dictate what we should study. Please oppose HF 2634 and protect the promise Minnesota made to its students. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. All right. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify for or against the bill? Okay. Members, do you have any questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. And I couldn't agree more with what Mike Dean had said, Representative Bakeberg. So I appreciate like this reiteration of what this committee quite clearly knows, that we have a lot of workforce needs that our committee is uniquely responsible for filling. But really, none of your testifiers elaborated why this bill is going to do something different than what our other bills already do. I mean, between our workforce grants, the scholarships, like were mentioned, the dual training programs, I mean, we're really doing a lot of those things that like every testifier basically said that we need. So what I'm hearing from this testimony is that North Star Promise works. And cutting the funding to it, I think, is absolutely unacceptable. I know that as somebody with $100,000 of student loan debt, as somebody who's who had college that was never on this horizon for me until I knew that I could get some grants at least, these are opportunities that I think cutting this program down to what you're looking at would drastically take away from a lot of people. I think the other question I'm really curious about is, as I look at the top jobs that are listed, and I understand the bill says that OHE and Deed will decide this together, but most of the top jobs don't require a degree. So in that case, do we like move to the next 10, or what's the strategy at that point? You know, one of the jobs on there is a cashier, for example, working in hospitality. Do we just skip to the next ones, or how do we kind of decide, I guess, what comes next after that? I appreciate, you know, trusting OHE and Deed to come up with that information. But at the same time, I do think that it's our responsibility to have some metrics and some guardrails around how they would come to those decisions. I guess my question for you would be, is it your belief that students these days are choosing degrees that won't get them jobs that are in need in Minnesota?
Representative Bakeberg.
I think, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hansen. I think we need to be, when we have a looming $6 billion deficit, and we had an $18 billion surplus, raised taxes by $10 billion, and a looming deficit, we have to be wise about the realities that we're facing in every single committee. So the spirit of this bill is to help support students so that when they graduate, they are able to have a job. They are able to find work. And you hit the nail on the head about the top demand industries. I mean, you know, you have to go to number three is a registered nurse, and that's the highest paid profession on that list. So if we want to have a conversation about some you know, when you're pursuing a higher ed degree, to having some requirements in that, having some certifications or diplomas, I'm happy to do it. But the goal of the bill is to ensure that students that graduate have a job when they graduate. Because what I'm hearing consistently from kids that come back, you know, when they come back from break, they're struggling to find a job. I have two kids in college right now, and they're looking for internships within their field, and it's hard for them to find internship opportunities, which leads to potential that they may not be able to find employment into the future, and one's going into business and one's going into interior design. So I'm happy to have ongoing conversations about amending or adding the bill, but yeah.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for that answer, Representative Bakeberg. I guess, did I miss in your introduction where you had said that the goal of this bill was simply to cut funding on the backs of students?
Representative Bakeberg.
I've never said that. That's not the intention. It's to support students.
Thank you. One last follow-up, then we have
Chair, and thank you, Representative Bakeberg, because your last comment, you said that with a $6 billion looming deficit, that's why this bill was before us. I just want to say that if we have a goal, if that's the goal, please say that in your introduction so that the public is very clear that that's what the ask here is. Because as we look at the bill, it actually doesn't address anything our other programs don't already address, and I think there's gaping holes in this. So that's my comment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Representative Coulter.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to pick up a little bit on this because I think that is a really, really important point that Representative Hansen just made. Because I guess really my first question is, as defined in the bill, based on the top 20 industries and occupations with the highest projected employment growth or highest number of job openings in the state, does that list exist somewhere and I'm not aware of it?
Representative Bakeberg.
Well, first off, it was, it's difficult to find the exact list, but I was able to find multiple lists. So according to Deeds' top 20 in-demand occupations, it's home health and PCAs, or personal care attendants, retail sales, registered nurses, cashiers, nursing assistants, heavy tractor trailer, truck drivers, and then the list goes on from there. So I was able to, in my research, find multiple lists that are very similar, but that's the piece. And Representative Hansen is right. Many of the Deeds' top careers make less than $40,000. So I think we need to be wise in how we're using taxpayer dollars. So we're talking about taxpayer funds that are paying for college, and it's an investment. And I think there are some merits in it. That's where when I talked about Representative Coulter, you actually read the part that I would be open to having an ongoing conversation about being specific and requiring an industry certification. So that goes towards the CDL or a diploma. So I'm happy to have ongoing conversations about how we strengthen things. I'd love to work with you offline.
Follow up, Representative Coulter.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess, my overall point here, I mean, currently the North Star Promise is not tied to any particular course of study. So, I mean, to the extent that, those occupations require degrees or certifications, whatever it is, it already covers those. As do, as Representative Hansen mentioned, the workforce development scholarships. So, I mean, I think we do need to be clear here that you have said multiple times the purpose of this bill is to support students, but it does not do anything additional to support them. And so what it would do is eliminate from eligibility students going to public colleges and universities in the state of Minnesota who are not on this more or less undefined list of courses of study. And where I also have a concern with that is that we know that the lineup between what students study in college and the field of work that they go into, that doesn't always exist. And one of my favorite stats on that, partly because I was a music major, is that a higher percentage of music majors actually get accepted to medical school than biology majors. And so I think we need to be careful when we're talking about something like that. And I will also say, I take you at your word that you're trying to make good decisions here, but I object pretty strongly to the notion that the only purpose of an education is to contribute to the workforce. And you're an educator yourself, and I know you wouldn't say that, but I think that is an implication in the language of this bill. So I have really serious problems with it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hicks.
So I actually have two questions. The first one is, I have no idea whose children go to college and know what they're gonna do. Who are those people? Where are the 18-year-olds that figure that out day one? I mean, maybe they exist. That has not been my experience with teenagers. But so I'm curious, like, operationally, how does OHE do this? So many freshmen don't declare because they're 18. They have no idea. They've never tried anything. Do they want to be an interior designer or a teacher or an art teacher? I think the stat I heard is people change their majors like 6 times. So how does the Office of Higher Ed handle major changes? Do people, and how do we know they're going into that? What if they say they're going to go be a nurse and they're still just taking generals? And so for the first 2 years, they're taking generals and they're all fine. And then their junior year, halfway through, they don't get into the nursing program. And so now they've switched into another program. How do we change their financial aid in January? Like logistically, how does that work? That's kind of my question, because I have met very few teenagers, very few 18-year-olds who go to school with a major and graduate with the same one. And sometimes they switch it in the middle of the semester, right? They think they want to be a nurse. They take chemistry and they're like, oh, I hate this. This is rough. So when are we changing their financial aid? Are we changing it every semester? Are we changing it every year? How does OHE make sure they're enrolled in the right program the whole year? How does OHE make sure that they're taking the right classes? How did the counselors communicate that back to OHE? I mean, this just seems like a lot more state employees would be needed to do this work if we're going to track all these thousands of kids and see what classes they're registered for, and does their class in their major study, and when did it change? Did they officially declare? Are we making all students officially declare now to be able to get the scholarship? Are we making them do that the February of their senior year, because that's when we're doing FAFSA? Like, I just don't know how this works.
Representative Bickberg, there were a lot of questions there, so please
jump right in. I think Representative Hicks said that she had 2 questions, but I think I counted a few more than 2. But I think just at a very, very basic level, and Representative Coulter talked about my education background, a lot of these conversations are happening already in high school. So many of our high schools have pathway programs where kids are trying to figure out where they're going. And then I think the practical side is it would need to be evaluated on a yearly basis on where the kid's program is. You're exactly right. Most kids don't declare. I mean, my son that's a freshman hasn't declared his major yet. Now, he's pretty convinced on what he's going to do, mostly because he talked to someone and he heard what he could make in that field. So he's excited about that, and trying to tell him that he's not going to make that right out of college. But it's going to be an evaluation process that has to happen, with OHE and DEED. And that's that 3-year evaluation to continually determine the in-demand markets.
Thank you. A follow-up, Representative Hicks.
I'll be really quick, but I don't see a fiscal note that would account for all of the OHE staff that would be necessary to evaluate all of those children every year to make sure they're still enrolled in the right program, or this MNSCU and University of Minnesota counselors that would be necessary to submit all that paperwork.
Thank you. Did you want to comment, Representative Bickberg? All right. Next, we have Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Bickberg, for your bill. When I read this yesterday, one of the things that I thought is, what is the purpose of an education? Can you please tell me what is the purpose of higher education?
Representative Bickberg.
Oh, that's a loaded question, Representative Claiborne, to ask an educator. Well, mm-hmm. I think really it's to figure out on a basic level, what are your gifts and talents? How are you wired? That's what I talk about from my school lens. And I think it moves into higher ed as well. It's to help you figure out where you're at, your gifts and talents. But I think specifically with the North Star Promise, we have to remember that these are taxpayer funds going to students to support them. And that's fine. That's wonderful. But students, if they choose to take the North Star Promise, I believe that there should be a benefit to the student. They should have a job when they graduate. But there also should be that the job that the student goes into addresses or aligns with the labor and workforce needs of the community as well, so that the business community can have a pipeline of workers. So it's to support kids. It's to help kids find their gifts and talents and their passions, but it's also to support our economy. This morning in the Labor and Workforce Committee, we heard about childcare and the major need for childcare workers. And there are well, there are some amazing people that are choosing to go into that field. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's to support students, to help them find their gifts and talents. It's to support our economy, and it's to support businesses and to make sure that we're supporting our economy moving forward.
Thank you. Follow-up, Representative Cleaborne. Then we have one more person, and we need to kind of keep moving.
Thank you. So there are a couple of things in your statement, right? Through government legislation, through the legislation we write here at the Capitol, we subsidize many different things, right? So if we were going to apply this toward the North Star Promise, right, that the taxpayer dollars going to school, then some business, some place should get some benefit. Well, lots of tax dollars don't just come from businesses, so there's that piece of it. But then we don't put this standard, the same standard, on state grant, right? We can say state grant, best education, best choice, go where you want, study what works best for you. Those are also taxpayer dollars, right? So this opens up a whole can of worms. When I take a subsidy for my mortgage interest deduction, for example, no one says to me, but you can only work in this field or that field, right? When a business takes a 179 deduction on a piece of capital equipment, we don't say, but oh, by the way, you're taking taxpayer dollars, so you also need to do X, Y, and Z, right? So we need to think about what is the intent of the appropriation. And the appropriation for the North Star Promise is to allow students, as you say also, to seek their passion and to go where they most might succeed and excel, right? So for those reasons, I can't support this bill at this moment. I think there are places where if we're trying to deal with budget deficits, we have many, many levers that we can work with. And I would be happy to work with you on those endeavors. But to say that I would condition someone to only these occupations, right? I went to college initially to study modern languages, which is really important when you're thinking about a global economy, right? I ended up getting a business degree, neither of which would qualify for North Star Promise under your bill. But there are many contributions that people make, and they may start out in one place and zigzag to another. So I can't support this at this time. I'll just leave it at that, but thank you for your time.
Thank you. And I just got a note that Wendy from OHE would like to address some of the issues that have been raised. So we welcome you to the committee. Please state your name. And we do want to move on, so please keep your comments relatively short. Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Wendy Robinson. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Programs, Policies, and Grants at OHE. If you've heard me testify before, you know I talk fast, so I will keep it moving. I did want to note, because I heard some discussion regarding a fiscal note or some of the costs or potential perhaps savings that might come along with this bill, and I did want to note that OHE is in the process of trying to respond to the request for the fiscal note. But in full disclosure, it's a really challenging one to address for a couple of different reasons. One is that there's not the list of top 20 programs has not been identified. What would be on that list, as has been noted, there's a couple of different versions that we could look at. Realistically, we would potentially look at creating a different top 20 list that would include programs that do require some sort of post-secondary education. So not knowing what that list is, we don't know kind of which students might be on the pathway for that. Even within that list, we know that there are programs where the name of the program and the job that they get afterwards are one and the same. So nursing is on the list. We know that that's going to include BSN students, that's going to include RN students, that's going to include LPN students, that could include pre-nursing students. There'd probably be about 10 to 15 degree programs that might be eligible for that. Then you would look at something like physician assistants, which is an area that we do have need for in the state. You can get a bachelor's degree in anything to go into a physician assistant graduate program. So what do you do with that? We also know that there are various sales occupations that are on the high demand thing. People can go into sales from a variety of backgrounds. In the past, when the state has looked at doing workforce development type scholarships or grant programs like the Future Together program, and eventually sort of settled into clusters, so there was an education cluster, healthcare cluster, some of those. Once they identified those various clusters, almost every degree program fell into one of them because there are so many different pathways that a student can take to get into gainful employment. So narrowing down which programs would actually be qualified is is really, really difficult to do because probably most of them do. The other challenge that we would have is that we know that it is difficult to get accurate information about what programs of study students are actually in. A student may declare a major when they enter into college. They may, in their heart and in their course-taking behavior, change to a different program of study, but they don't necessarily update that with their institution. So on paper, they're an Associates of Applied Science student, but in their course-taking behavior, they're actually in an AA program because they're just switching their courses. And so when we've had the data about what program, how many students are in which particular programs across the state, OHE doesn't currently have that as part of our state grant projections data that we get from institutions. And so it does leave us in a little bit of a challenging situation to actually estimate what the cost impact of this bill would likely be. So I just wanted to share that that's why the fiscal note hasn't been submitted yet.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. We're going to quickly go to Representative Novotny, and then Representative Bakeberg really needs to fly to his next committee. So Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Robbins. Representative Bakeberg, the testifier from OHE, answered most of the questions I was going to ask. I think the overwhelming theme of your response is we don't know. So I'm going to just go on and try to point out some things. What does this committee know that everybody knows? Well, what they should know is we don't have any money. We started this program. We don't have enough money. I think, Representative Coulter, you said gaping holes. Yes, we have gaping holes. We have gaping holes in the funding. We can't cover everything that's going to be. What's the purpose of education? It needs to be something useful, I think, if we're going to be paying for it. As a guy who just mailed my income tax statement, income tax payment in, I'd like to know that the portion of my income taxes and my wife's income taxes goes to something that's actually useful. When they're taking out at the percentage that we're paying, I'd like to know it's going to something other than underwater basket weaving and protest. So if you, you know, I think it's why I just saw in the news that there's a prominent adult offspring of an elected official in this state who's not going back to school because she doesn't get the protest at the school she's at. So that's her major concern when it goes to college. So I don't know what the purpose of education is if it's not to learn and get something that will help you become a productive citizen, unless you think protest is making you a productive citizen. So last response, many, many resources and reserves that we can use instead of cutting this funding. Well, we're not really cutting anything. We're limiting it in scope to maybe fit the limited amount of money that was provided for it. That's not going to be close. But as far as those reserves, no, there are not reserves. Those reserves disappeared in a very loud vote on a 1,400-page bill that nobody read. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bakeberg, do you have any closing comments?
Nope, or just very quickly, thank you. The goal of House File 2634 is to make the North Star Promise dollars actually address the workforce shortage needs in Minnesota while supporting students. I understand it's going to be laid over, and I'm happy to work with anyone who wants to work together to make this program more effective for students. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bakeberg. HF 2634 is laid over for possible inclusion. Members, we're going to quickly just go back. Just a second, Representative Hansen. We're going to quickly go back and just approve the minutes because there is a motion from Vice Chair Schwartz on the table to approve the minutes now that you've all had time to review them. I also reviewed them and didn't see any corrections, but is there any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of Representative Schwartz's motion to approve the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. All right, now we will go to Representative Hansen. Representative Hansen, welcome to your committee. You can move the bill for possible inclusion,
or I can, Madam Chair.
Perfect. This is HF 2610, members.
Please begin.
Thank you, Chair. And I know I do not look like the esteemed Chair Rarick, but I am filling in for her today, happily so, on House File 2610. This bill was brought to the committee at the request of Minnesota State on behalf of Metro State University, and I'm pleased to be joined by President Jenny Arthur, who will share about the great work that they are doing in the cybersecurity field there. In statute, we define the broad missions of our public higher education system so that there is not overlap, and several years ago, Minnesota State was granted authority to do applied doctorates in education, business, psychology, physical therapy, audiology, and nursing. And this legislation simply adds cybersecurity to the mix. And Metro State's leadership in this area is also a really great asset here in Minnesota. So I'll give President Arthur a moment to talk about some of that and give you a little bit more of an overview. You're going to hear a similar bill in this committee later this week that also addresses AI and some of our future planning on this. And so consider this a seed that is being planted to continue those conversations. I will say personally, I think it's really important that we add AI to this in addition to cybersecurity, given the growth of it, and then continue to have we can kind of tussle back and forth about the future planning piece of that. But with that, I'll turn it over to President Arthur.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. President, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Robbins and members of the committee. My name is Jenny Arthur, and I serve as the president of Metro State. Chair Robbins, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to be here today and to explain why authorization for Metro State to offer an applied doctorate in cybersecurity is so critical. Metro State has established a very strong academic program in cybersecurity at the undergraduate and graduate level. We feel that our work has now matured to the point that we are ready to develop and support an applied doctorate. Our cyber programs are recognized by the National Security Agency as a National Center of Academic Excellence in Cyber Defense, a National Center of Academic Excellence in Cyber Operations. We are one of 22 in the nation, and by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence as an intelligence community center of academic excellence, of which there are 80 in the country. Metro State is the recipient of numerous grants from the NSA for workforce development, including the Cyber for Heroes program, which supports veterans and first responders in achieving cyber-related certifications, congressionally directed funding to support entrepreneurial development of cyber business in partnership with the Neighborhood Development Center, and other funding to further develop our educational and workforce programs. You may have read about the cybersecurity clinic we run, where students receive hands-on experience in assisting small businesses and nonprofits, school districts, and rural municipal governments in Minnesota in improving their cyber hygiene and defenses. These are entities that do not have the resources to fully develop a cyber strategy, yet hold important information on behalf of the residents of Minnesota. Through the clinic, we both develop student skills and knowledge, and we help protect our community. At Metro, there are currently 129 students in the bachelor's degree program, 57 enrolled in the master's program in cyber operations, and 537 students enrolled in the undergraduate pre-major, finishing some prerequisite work before they begin work on their major requirements. Just we're talking about workforce, and there is a huge workforce need for cybersecurity. Nationally, it's estimated there are 460,000 unfilled cybersecurity roles. In Minnesota, the estimate is currently 5,700 jobs are unfilled. These are well-paying jobs, and they help to propel our graduates into the middle class or better. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, cybersecurity is expected to be one of the fastest growing occupations over the next 10 years, with a 33% projected growth rate. In addition, those currently working in cyber operations need constant upskilling to stay ahead of threat actors. Hopefully you've all paid your Easy Pass bills. Cybersecurity is an excellent profession for the laddering of academic credentials. Good entry-level jobs are available for those with certificates and associate's degrees, with many opportunities for increasing skills and compensation by progressing through a bachelor's, master's, or yes, doctoral degree. Often, employers are willing to financially assist students with taking those next steps. It's well understood that the shortage of doctorally qualified faculty at regional comprehensive universities like those in Minnesota State and private institutions is severely impacting the development of a much-needed cyber-trained workforce at the associate, bachelor's, and master's degree level. The National Cybersecurity Strategy calls for increasing educational opportunities across all levels of post-secondary awards. The applied doctorate can be useful in corporate operational settings as well as in higher ed classrooms. With the funding that's coming to Metro State to our Applied Research Institute through appropriations at the federal level and small business innovation research grants and small business technology transfer grants, we have ample capacity to support applied research for doctoral students. Thanks to the legislature's assistance with the bonding bill last year, we are now opening an educational secure operations center on campus. So we do have the facilities we need to support the research as well. Please know that no other institution in the state of Minnesota is filling this critical need for cybersecurity workforce. The applied doctorate will help us boost the development and strengthening of more cybersecurity programs in our two-year partner schools and throughout the universities. Thus, I'm asking you to please amend MS-135A052 to allow us to offer the applied doctorate in cybersecurity. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify? Is there any member discussion? Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hansen, and also Chair Rerich for bringing this bill forward. And thanks to the President. Welcome. As a graduate from Metro State with computer science, so I wanted to say this is really important. I know that the tools that are offered at the school are up to par with what we have in the industry. So I'll encourage that we support this bill and continue to fund AI and other programs that are necessary in this new industry that we're in and to support the economy. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative, for pinch hitting for Chair Rerich today, Rep. Hansen. And thank you to the President, President Arthur, for being here. This is such an important industry. I mean, every day, you know, well, almost every day we hear about data breaches and different things. And, you know, a couple times a year I get something in the mail saying my data's been compromised. And it's ever vigilance that's required in this field. And I'm sure it's constantly changing and probably a little bit hard to keep up with all the changes. But I just want to thank you for coming here and for being a resource at your university for a place to go and get this education for Minnesotans. I think it's so important. And so I just kind of echo what Representative Knorr said, and I thank you for being here and for coming here for this ask.
Thank you. Any closing comments, Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Chair. As you heard here today, you know, not all of the necessary jobs that are needed in our economy and in our communities are going to be captured on any particular report. So it's important that we support the folks who are making these critical updates, identifying the needs in our society so we don't get letters in the mail every day about our data being breached by someone or something else. So I would hope that you would include this and then keep in mind the role that AI is playing in cybersecurity as we go forward as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Seeing no further discussion, HF 2610 is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you. Representative Scott. Welcome to your committee. Representative Scott, would you like to move HF 2241 for possible inclusion?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, Madam Chair, that's my motion.
Excellent. Please begin your testimony, state your name for the record, and then if your testifiers are available, they can come forward.
Perfect. Representative Peggy Scott, and House File 2241, first of all, we have a couple of amendments. Maybe we should tackle those first.
We should do the amendments first. Yes, I think we'll do the A3. So I'll move the A3 for members the First Amendment.
Madam Chair, what the A3 does...
This is weird. It was on. What the A3 does is change in the bill that a person that receives the North Star Promise funds must stay 3 years after graduation. What this does is say for every year that they for every year that they receive those dollars, that they stay in the state of Minnesota and contribute to our society and to our economy.
Great. Thank you for that explanation. Chair Scott moves the A3 to HF 2241. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry. I just wanted to clarify because you said the A3, you said it would, you said there was a limit of up to 3 years. It sounded like you said something that I don't read in the language, and I just want to make sure I understand what the amendment does. The language of the amendment, duration of the residency requirement must be equal to the total duration of all academic terms, but it doesn't have that kind of limit.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott.
Thank you. You are right, Representative Coulter, and I was thinking of the 3 years in the original bill. So, yeah, this is for every year that they receive it.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure I understood what we were doing.
Yes. And maybe Madam Chair, I should have put up to 3 years.
Well, it's being laid over for possible inclusion, so if you want to entertain a further amendment down the road, we can take a look at that. But for now, we'll go with the A3 as written.
Madam Chair.
Co-Chair Wogamott. Sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would urge members to support the amendment, not because of the merit of the amendment, but as a courtesy to the author to get the bill in the shape that the author wishes.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Chair Wogamott. So, any other discussion on the A3? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the A3, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The ayes have it, and the A3 is adopted. Now there's another amendment, the A2. Representative Hicks, would you like to explain the amendment?
Yes, thank you so much, Chair. I would urge the committee to consider this amendment. As you all know, disability happens. People literally get hit by buses. Like that's a real thing that happens. They get meningitis and suffer a traumatic brain injury. They're in a car accident. All of those things are real, and this amendment basically removes the requirement that they pay it back or work if they become disabled. It also limits should they not graduate or if they decide college isn't for them. I talk to a lot of people, a lot of young people who try school. They give it a shot. They try for a semester, and then they decide that that's maybe not for them. Maybe they were going to be a nurse, and now they're it's not for them, so they're a CNA at a nursing home. I would like to make sure that we do not punish those students for making that choice, and I would really like to make sure that we don't punish people who go to school and become disabled. Anywhere in that pathway.
Thank you. Representative Scott, did you have any comments on the A2?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hicks, I would encourage a yes vote on the amendment. It does say within 6 years so she doesn't leave it wide open for a professional student, right? So she does put a time limit on that. So I would encourage member support.
Thank you. Is there any other comments on the A2? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The A2 is adopted. Representative Scott, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 2241, as amended, is a common sense bill that would require students who receive free tuition through the North Star Promise to stay in Minnesota for 1 year after graduation for every year they receive free tuition. We are simply asking that they have some skin in the game upon receiving this generous benefit from the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota. Other states have similar programs. It's already been mentioned that New York has this very similar program. The state of Tennessee has a program that requires 8 hours of community service for each semester a student receives free tuition. Many others require a minimum grade point averages or certain ACT scores for eligibility. Minnesota, as we all know, has a workforce shortage. We have developed many programs to help address some of these shortages, and we heard about many of those over the past few weeks here in this committee, including programs that help pay for medical school and residencies. We need and want these young adults to stay. We have diverse industry here, from positions that require certificate to a baccalaureate degree and beyond, or bachelor's degree and beyond. There are literally openings in nearly every industry in our state. At the end of the day, like OHE Commissioner Olson said in committee last week, we are developing programs for our students and, quote, we want them to stay here, we want them to stay and raise a family, and we want them to stay and contribute to Minnesota's economy. According to the U.S. Census information, 5 years after graduating, only 69% of our students are still in Minnesota. In New York, it's 79%. In Texas, it's 85%. In Illinois, it's 73%. In Georgia, it's 72%. We have an overall net migration out of the state that began in 2020. This is not sustainable. We need to do more to keep our students and young adults here. This is a simple, common sense way to do it. Minnesota is a generous state, but for something that is so indicative of future success as post-secondary education, I do not think it is too much to ask these students who receive this valuable asset that they stay and work and give back by contributing to Minnesota's economy for as little as 1 year for each year they received free tuition. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Scott. We have a couple of testifiers on the list. Shay Horning.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Shay Horning, and I am a junior at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I study political science, and I serve as the Director of State Government Affairs for the undergraduate student government on campus. I am here today to speak about the transformational impact of the North Star Promise Scholarship, not just for individual students, but for the future of higher education in Minnesota. While I am not a recipient myself, I see the impact of programs like North Star Promise every day. So many students are juggling tuition, jobs, the skyrocketing costs of housing and groceries. These aren't abstract struggles. They are real daily obstacles that stand between students and their ability to earn a degree. In the fall, I was talking to a student about student government's steadfast support for North Star Promise and the ways we advocated for it in 2023. As soon as I mentioned North Star Promise, his eyes lit up and he said, "That's why I'm able to go to college." For thousands of students, North Star Promise makes higher education possible when it otherwise may not have been. It's a promise that your future shouldn't be defined by the financial circumstances you were born into. Right now, students are grappling with historic cost of living increases, rising mental health challenges, and systemic barriers that still make college out of reach for many. The uncertainty about their future weighs on them, but North Star Promise provides something invaluable, hope and opportunity. This program isn't just about dollars and cents, it's about what it communicates to students, that their education matters, that Minnesota believes in their potential, that investing in them is investing in our collective future. And when students have the support they need, they don't just survive, they thrive. They graduate, they innovate, they give back, they become the teachers, nurses, engineers, and entrepreneurs who will build the Minnesota of tomorrow. But they need a fair shot. That is why I strongly urge you to reject HF 2634 and HF 2241. These bills impose unnecessary and unenforceable restrictions on the North Star Promise program. They would complicate a program designed to remove barriers, creating more roadblocks for the very students it was meant to help. We don't impose these kinds of residency requirements on the state grant program or workforce scholarships because they're impractical and impossible to enforce. North Star Promise should be no different. Adding red tape only undermines its purpose and limits opportunities for students in need. Thank you for believing in Minnesota students and the power of higher education to transform lives. I urge you to keep North Star Promise strong and accessible for all who need it. Thank you.
Good testimony.
Next up, we have Karina Valeda. Forgive me for mispronouncing your name.
Close.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name so we all understand it. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. So good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Karina Valeda. I'm a mother, a student, an advocate, and a future lawyer, and I'm here today because I know firsthand how impactful the North Star Promise is for student parents like myself, and how this bill can also create new barriers that make it hard for us to succeed. My mother was a Salvadorian immigrant who didn't speak English, yet she managed to open a thriving grocery store. She did that because that was her strength in El Salvador. But she worked around the clock to provide me and my siblings with a better life. Her commitment to our future was undeniable. When I was applying for college, I wanted to make the most affordable choice and pick the best degree to offer a future for me and my daughter, Luna. And I didn't want to raise her like my mom raised us, living paycheck to paycheck, working nights, weekends, and holidays. My experiences in higher education and the administrative help in our colleges have allowed me to pick a good paying job and one that matches my strengths. So when I graduate, I will be well established. Choosing a degree is a deeply personal decision that should be based on one's strengths, passions, and long-term goals, and not dictated by the government. We should be supporting the resources and guidance already available at our colleges so that students are better able to identify a good paying career and choose a path that aligns with their abilities and sets students up for long-term success. Just like my mom did, she found her passion in entrepreneurship. That's why she had her grocery store for 15 years. The North Star Promise has made the process simple, clear, and accessible, so why add more barriers to higher education? This bill threatens to take us backwards. If we really, truly care about addressing the workforce shortages, we should make it easier and not harder. And nobody should be forced to take degrees in subjects that they are not interested in. This will lead students to burnout, life dissatisfaction, and even poor grades. I don't plan to move out of Minnesota, but you never know what life can bring. A child may get sick and require out-of-state help. A parent might need to flee an unsafe situation. Life is unpredictable, especially for student parents, and this bill will punish families for circumstances beyond their control. I have paid taxes and contributed to the state for years before even going to college and using the North Star Promise, and like so many other student parents, I want to graduate, work, and give back to Minnesota. We should be breaking down barriers and not building up new ones, and I urge you to reject these bills and keep the North Star Promise accessible for all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the public who would wish to testify on the bill? Any member discussion? Chair Liebling and then Representative Botany.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chair Scott. It's been mentioned a few times today, this issue about the state grant. I think, too, obviously, in this committee, we learned that we do a lot of state investment into our state colleges and universities. And so when a student goes to those schools, obviously, they're also getting a lot of state support. I had that myself when I went to the University of Minnesota years ago. I wouldn't have been able to go to college myself had the taxpayers of Minnesota not supported those efforts. So my question to you is, how do you answer this question that's been asked a number of times by people here today? If we're going to condition North Star Promise the way it's been proposed in your bill and Representative Bakeberg's bill, why don't we do that to the state grant? And why don't we do that to students who are going to our public colleges and universities because they also are benefiting from state tax dollars? So I just wonder how you would answer that.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Liebling or Chair Liebling for that question. And I think we need to consider that. I think we need to consider the state grant program and some of these other programs that we have in the state of Minnesota. We heard from medical student residents that are getting hundreds of thousands of dollars, and there's no real requirement that they stay in Minnesota. We want them to, and sometimes the majority of them do, but that it's a big investment.
to have, to give someone dollars for higher education. The state does overall send money for higher education. I get that. Now, I grew up in Iowa, I don't know how, but maybe it was just a thing back then that no one told us how to apply for it. I remember my parents doing the FAFSA, but my dad made $250 a week, and my mom was a stay-at-home mom. I got zero. I got zero. My kids got zero. They had to take out loans. And it's not like we're flush with money over here. So I think that we do need to, in light of the workforce shortages that we have in the state of Minnesota, in light of a very generous program like the state grants or this program, the North Star Promise, I think it is not asking too much for them to give back by way of staying here for a few years post-graduation and contributing to our economy.
Chair Lively.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so when we're talking about, like, residencies, there are some programs, in fact, where we do scholarships that are conditioned on working in the state to get loan forgiveness and so on. So it's not that far off. But I guess what I would just say is that even though we're a sovereign state, we're also part of a nation. And Minnesota's done pretty well. And I think, what was the statistic, something like 80% of our students do stay here. And I think we heard earlier in the session that even though we do have this outflow of young people, that they come back later. So I think it's, and too, one of my colleagues here reminded me that not only are we benefiting students by investing in our public colleges, but in all of our institutions that have nonprofit status, as we know, what that means is tax-exempt status. So in a very real way, the taxpayers are also supporting those institutions. So I appreciate where you want to go. I just think it's a really awkward and difficult thing to do, because where do you draw the line? I mean, we are putting a lot of money into the state grant. We've been doing that for many, many years. And we don't ask for this kind of direct payback from students. And in this other investment that we do in nonprofits, in supporting institutions, we don't ask for a direct payback from students. And yet, I think that the evidence shows that Minnesota gets a tremendous amount of return. But it's not something you can just quantify very easily. That's probably the problem. But so I think that doing this, I think the bill is problematic, but I certainly don't fault you for the concern. I just think that operationalizing this in a way that makes it fair is really kind of beyond something that we can do. And frankly, for me, kind of something beyond what I would want to do, because I really think that the North Star Promise program is showing a lot of promise and is really very successful. And while I recognize that we need to make sure that we're going to be able to fund the things that we want to fund, I don't think that this is really the way to go. So thank you.
Thank you. Chair Scott, did you have any comment?
No, I really appreciate the discussion. And I put myself in these students' shoes. And if someone gave me free tuition, I would gladly sign a document saying, I'll stay here for every year that I get money from the taxpayers of Minnesota. I would gladly sign that.
Great. Chair Novotny.
Thank you. I just have one suggestion that I'd like to see just for a clarification. There are some abilities for the commissioner to make a waiver of the fees, but I'd like to see something for someone that's in the Guard or the reserves if they're on a military deployment, or, you know, they could have easily been going through school and they would get called up for a deployment where they would be gone or out of state for multiple years. So I'd just like to see that cleaned up in an amendment if it comes back.
All right. Chair Scott. Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think that's a really good suggestion. I do want to point out in the bill, I forget which line it is, but the here it is on 3.3. The commissioner can make exceptions to the payback for circumstances involving extreme hardship. Now, that wouldn't necessarily be extreme hardship, but I do think if you get called away for no, for something such as the guard or military duty, then that's a whole different thing, and I think that's something that could be written into the bill, or that could fall under some of the discretion that would be given to the commissioner.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. And my comment, Chair Scott, around, along the same lines as Chair Novotny's and Chair Liebling's, in regards to what does hardship mean? It's really where I was going to go with this. You know, if I have to go out of state to take care of an elderly or injured family member, you know, and I have to get a job there, if there aren't any jobs that I get my degree in Minnesota, if it's a really, really competitive market, and to feed my children, I need to go out of state to get a job in my degree field and where I'm knowledgeable. So I do think expanding upon what does extreme hardship mean there, and, you know, as somebody who also grew up in poverty and had, you know, really no family to help me with college, I just want to say I understand that, like, we would probably do something if we were offered that case. But just because we suffered something does not mean that we should allow other folks to. I think the point of suffering is for us to help prevent more of it. And so I would not want to, you know, force this on a lot of the folks who are going through it, because, again, this is targeted at North Star Promise, which only affects folks who went through what we've kind of grown up with families like ours, as opposed to everybody who might have been more privileged. And so I agree with the premise that, you know, if North Star Promise kids got to stay here, then I think it's fair to say anybody receiving any kind of state funding or anything at all would have to, which essentially would mean every single person who comes to Minnesota for college would need to stay right here in Minnesota. And so I think that's kind of like a hard line, and I do think we need to grapple with that a little bit. So,
Chair Scott, briefly, and then we have Representative Coulter, and then we have to move on. So.
I will just say I learned an awful lot by having to pay my own way, and I don't know that that's suffering. I think there are a lot of lessons in life. And so we can agree to disagree on the perspective on that. But I wanted to bring this bill for discussion. I think it's a really good discussion point. This is a very generous program. And so with that, I will.
Well, we have two more.
Oh, we have
two more people who want to comment. So let's try to keep it tight, Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will do my best. And I almost asked about this when I asked about the amendment before, but I didn't want to. Believe it or not, I did not want to delay things. but you said several times that the duration of the residency requirement refers to years, but the language of the amendment refers to academic terms, and that's my assumption is that would be either like a semester or a summer term or something like that. And I guess where I'm going with that is that, to my knowledge, and I'm far from an expert, there is no standard length of academic term in state law. So what we could be looking at then is different residency requirements based on someone going to a different college. And so I think that makes it, That would sort of add to the barriers, sort of the difficulty in kind of enforcing this in a real way, because then it would depend. I mean, you'd have to get that kind of information and follow students and make sure that a student who goes to Mankato State is staying for X number of days, and a student who goes to the University of Minnesota is staying for X number of days. So I think it's a little bit challenging of a thing to get at. But my question really is, you know, there's this employment requirement, and it doesn't specify sort of, you know, the how often, or I'm trying to think of the right word and I can't right now. But it doesn't specify like a certain amount of work per whatever time period, per month or year or whatever. So, I mean, am I correct in understanding then that if someone graduates from college and, you know, picks up a shift once a week at a coffee shop, which is absolutely hard work, they would meet that work requirement? Am I correct in understanding that?
Chair Scott.
Madam Chair, thank you for the question. I think the details of that need to probably be worked out, Representative Coulter, and I don't know if House Research has any comments on that. I know other states have similar programs, and I don't think we'd be recreating the wheel here. I don't know if House Research has anything to say. They may not, but
Mr. Hopkins?
Madam Chair, members. So yeah, there's no detail on the employment requirement. It just says be employed. There's no minimum number of hours or anything like that.
Okay. Thank you. And just to sort of finish my thought here, I don't know. I mean, other folks have raised the question of what extreme hardship means. But I don't know if that would include, for example, someone graduates, gets a job, and then loses their job, and it can sometimes take a long time to find a new job. Those of us who graduated from college in May of 2008 have some experience with that. And so I think I understand what you're getting at here, but I think it's one of those things that the devil really is in the details, and I just think there's too much devilishness in these details for me to support it. But thank you.
Thank you. I'm just going to quickly go to Representative Allen, and then you can summarize in your closing. Chair Scott.
Thank you, Chair Robbins, and I really appreciate you bringing us forward, Chair Scott. I'm reminded of a program that we currently have running right now, a grant program at the University of Minnesota around vet students, which is a work requirement, which they have to stay here in the state of Minnesota in order to be able to be reimbursed for what they went to school for. I think this is an incredibly great idea. It's just sad to see the governor and OHE, for some reason, don't think it's a program that has any value, especially around the idea that it's so critical to the food program or the food system we have here in the state of Minnesota, and more specifically nationally in terms of food security and what's currently going on. So, I mean, we already have experience doing this. We already have an understanding of how it works. Even though the governor doesn't think we need to have it, OHE doesn't have it, want to have it anymore, and apparently very few at the University of Minnesota and the Regents Group have no idea that this kind of thing is currently going on. So thank you for bringing this forward. I think it's very critical and very important, and I'm happy to support this 100%.
Thank you. Closing comments, Chair Scott.
I'll just be brief. Thank you for the discussion. There are some details that I think can be worked out on this. Again, we're not recreating the wheel. Other states are doing this. And, you know, in this day of record keeping, I don't think it's going to be that hard to record keep. If you are a W-2 or a contract employee, the Department of Revenue has that information to verify that you're in the state of Minnesota. And so I just really appreciate the discussion. And thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Scott. HF 2241, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion. Now we'll bring up Representative Scraba, who has been coming back and forth between his other committee. He really needs to get this done. So I will move HF 2520 to be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Scraba, for your patience and your testifiers. Please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Chair Robbins. Representative Scraba, I was outside with AFSCME people, so it's important that they know that I'm still here. So House File 2520, and I do have a testifier online to fill in my blanks when I'm done, but NRRI, Natural Resource Research Institute, it's based in Duluth and in Coleraine. Chartered by the 1983 Minnesota legislature with a dual mission of economic development of Minnesota's natural resources coupled with stewardship of the state's unique ecosystems associated with those resources. Basically taking the woods and making a product, and how do we do it the best way, the cleanest way, the safest way. That is what they're doing. What they do is phenomenal. It's just short of phenomenal. I'm so into it that you could hear me talk all day about these guys. They do nothing for me but good. So rather than fill you in all the 1980s, what's going on, I'm going to let Rolf Weberg take you on his journey, if I may. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Scraba. So Rolf Weberg, I believe, is on Zoom. Yes, nice to see you, sir. Please state your name for the record, and we are trying to keep this moving, so please keep your testimony short. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair Robbins and members of the committee. Thanks also, Representative Scraba, for your leadership here. I'll keep my comments short because I had an opportunity to speak to this committee about a month ago, but underscoring that the legislature created NRI, placed us in the University of Minnesota, one of the largest research centers in the country, with broad partnerships in industry, communities, and our government. You have a handout there, a one-pager, and I'm talking about the first page that deals with NRI. I'll just point out in there, since we've already talked about it, that those three initiatives that we are celebrating, ecosystem resilience, iron minerals of the future, and forestry and bioeconomy, that portfolio of integrated strategic research initiatives has now attracted attention and partnerships from around the world that are looking at solutions between energy, water, and materials, which essentially make up our economy, in fact, our global economy. Right now, because of our portfolio, we have seven national labs at the U.S. Department of Energy engaging NRI in some very cutting-edge research and delivery, which has been the expectation of the legislature of NRI since I got here 11 years ago. We're bringing this home. On the bottom of that page are some examples of the return on investment, which we feel, per Roger Sprava's conversation, is we're delivering for the state of Minnesota. The next side of the page is really where the meat starts. I'm calling you from the National Renewable Energy Lab today, where we're in negotiations to talk about how to bring these realities to the state of Minnesota. It's an exciting opportunity for Minnesota to take a national leadership position in demonstrating what can be done here in this country to accelerate the transition of bedrock U.S. industry to the next level of global competitiveness on behalf of the country. It's building an industrial ecosystem, hydrogen-based, that you see on the left side of the sheet, to drive cross-sector coupling between very difficult-to-transition industries, but industries that are globally competitive, should be globally competitive, and should build that portfolio for global competitiveness, reduced impact, national security, and energy excellence and reliability, all of which are consistent with Minnesota state goals. Coupled with this is a large group of industry partners and community partners that we have been engaging very aggressively over the past year and a half to build this mighty effort, the Midwest Industrial Transformation Initiative. My colleague, Jamie Alexander, is there as well, who has been leading a lot of these community conversations around the state with governments, communities, and tribal communities. So what we're asking for is a Border Regents request for the legislature who created NRI to help us. The NRI facilities are largely unchanged since the early 1990s. We have tripled in size. We have three sites instead of one. We need to drive world-class capabilities that's accepted by industrial partners as well as the national lab partners. What we're looking for is recurring investment in NRI to be prepared to engage and partner in partnership with the national labs to be able to bring a national lab presence to Minnesota to drive these industries forward together in a responsible fashion. The money is to be used to increase a small increase in our researchers and support staff to be able to onboard this new technology, which I can go into detail if you want to, but most importantly, to provide the infrastructure, facilities, and instrumentation to onboard these technologies so that we can talk about advanced iron and steel, fuels, and fertilizers, and cement and concrete, those bedrock industries. Bringing a national lab presence to Minnesota is long overdue. Minnesota is behind in bringing a lot of this federal investment to the state, and we have an opportunity to do this together. Minnesota is in competition nationally for this capability. As you know, some of you may know, the national steel industry is migrating south. Minnesota has to have a more competitive iron offering if we're going to maintain that capability, but it's also in the national interest to have a vertically integrated steel industry for the future. So at stake is Minnesota iron relevance to the industry, fuels, ammonia, fertilizers, concrete, which really drives Minnesota goals and the future economy of the country. So with that, I'll stop my comments and invite any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Weberg. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify? Any member comments? Closing comments, Representative Scraba.
There's a rock in northern Minnesota called Olivine. If you take olivine and you put CO2 against it, it creates hydrogen. So this is the kind of stuff that they do. They do this stuff that we don't think about, you don't see. They have people doing this all the time. They're trying to figure out how to live on this planet with just with what we have. I represent millions and millions of trees and pounds of rocks. I don't represent a whole lot of community people. We have 43,000, all of us, but there's just not a lot of people in northern Minnesota, and this is what we have. So when Rolf and his people come in and take our trees and burn them and make a char, and that char cleans water and cleans things, the air, it's like, who thought of that, and how did it happen? It happened in northern Minnesota by people from NRRI, and I'm excited because it actually works with what we have. And for $9 million a year for the investment, the federal dollars that we're chasing are in hundreds of millions. So it's a big deal what's going to happen. If we find hydrogen in northern Minnesota, which there's a good chance, this helps because this really makes the green steel. This makes green everything for us. So it's I'm excited, beyond excited. I'm hoping some way we can keep this program flush. If you ever tour the Duluth, please come up there. He offers everyone to see it is phenomenal. What the work they do, they need an upgrade of the work that they tools they have, but they still do great work. And I just look forward to answering any questions if anyone has any more. But thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Scrubba. Seeing no further comments, HF 2520 is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you. Next up, Representative Knutson. Thank you. The chair moves HF 2520 before the committee, and we will lay the bill over for possible inclusion. But first, we have an amendment. Oh, I'm sorry. 2649. Sorry, I'm on my wrong page. Oh, there we go. Sorry. 2649 by Representative Knutson. I move it for possible inclusion. First, I'll recognize Representative Knutson to explain the bill and the A1 amendment. I will move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape that you would like it to be, Representative Knutson.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members, for allowing me to present this bill to you today. Yes, the A1 amendment is language that was worked on in the Senate with the Senate author and other higher ed institutions, and I would like to adopt that first, please.
Thank you. So the chair moves that A1 to HF 2649. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. Representative Knutson, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Chair. House File 2649, as amended, adds another tool in the toolbox for high school graduates and prospective higher ed students when making their post-high school plans. This bill requires employment outcomes to be accessible via the degree webpage on institutions' websites. Before these students take out massive student loans, students should know what the return on their investment might be and whether they could support that debt. The goal is to make this information easily accessible for the majors that they are considering. Institutions are happy to be transparent about their outcomes, and as amended, this bill does just that. The U.S. Census Bureau collects this information already and has it on their website. Sharing a link to this on the higher ed institution's webpage would make this information easy for students to access and help them decide if the majors that they're deciding to take in college are financially feasible. This bill does not create any new additional requirements on the institutions as far as data collection, just the accessibility of that information that's already out there. And with that, happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Do you have any? I don't see any testifiers. Did you have any?
No testifiers.
Is there anyone in the public who wishes to testify? All right. Any member comments or questions? Chair Liebling.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I just noticed that the bill has this random audit piece in it. And I, that makes me think maybe there's a pistol knot. Oh, that came out. Oh, okay. Very good. Thank you.
Any other member comments or questions? Oh, Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. I thought I had remembered this bill from before, so I just want to thank you for working the bill. I realize it wasn't your bill previously, but I appreciate the changes that you made and bringing it forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Closing comments, Representative Knutson.
Wow, that was way too easy. Thank you, Chair. Again, this bill is, it has been around for a while. It is just truly a tool, just adding one more tool to the toolbox of that big decision on what I'm going to do after high school. So thank you for considering it and laying it over.
Thank you. HF 2649, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Knutson. And members, that brings our committee meeting to a close. Oh, Chair Wilkamott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to remind the Higher Education House Democrats that we'll be caucusing in the caucus room at 3 o'clock. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Seeing no further discussion, we are adjourned. Thank you, members.